Another sermon and another invitation. This morning, you're going to be invited. No, you can say yes or no to this, right? But you're invited to a fault-finding symposium. This is set up specifically for followers of Jesus. And it's not just to meet him, it's a complete symposium. So it's a fault-finding symposium. So, you're invited to attend a special fault-finding symposium. It's on evening time. And then, where you are welcome to critique, criticize, correct, confront any major flaws or faults that you see in others who are in attendance. It's a fault-finding symposium. While attending this symposium, because the purpose is fault-finding, you are encouraged to do the following. To express your opinions on other people's faults and flaws. To ask as many direct and intrusive questions you wish. And you can do all of this while facing the person face to face. How would you like to respond to that invitation? Don't put up your hands. The Lord could be looking. Would you go to something like that? Truth being told, all of us, maybe not all of us, most of us have attended evenings like that. They were not advertised as that. They could have been advertised as social gatherings, prayer meetings, Bible study, or a general get-together. But they ended up mainly as a fault-finding evening. I'm sure you don't have to rack your brains too much to see where and when that has happened. While we mightn't go directly to our fault-finding symposium, we've all attended and maybe some even participated in this fault-finding flaws in other people. Religious people, I would say, and you can feel disagree, can be among the most judgmental, critical, and mean-spirited people who ever walked this earth. And our recent religious history, going back 50 years, proves that. Fault-finding, critical, judgmental, and most of all, mean-spirited. So the question we ask is simply this. As a people of God, why do we feel, why do we do that and feel justified in doing so? What is it about this nitpicking and finding fault and flaws in others that comes so naturally and so easily to all people, actually, but specifically to religious people? I haven't put up a list of answers as to why we do that and feel justified in doing so. Because when we get to what Jesus view in it, does not elect to stand on, no excuse is going to actually matter a rip. But fault-finding is not new to this generation of followers of Jesus. It was a major factor in Jesus' day. The question we really want to ask is, what's Jesus' view on this fault-finding pursuit? What does he actually think of it? Now, when this happens in situations, nobody thinks about what Jesus thinks. That's the God's honest truth. But he has a view on it, and actually, in fact, his view couldn't be clearer. Some things about what Jesus said can be difficult to understand and can carry a variety of interpretations. This, he doesn't give us any wobble room. lest we find a way out of it. So, on this fault-finding mission of critiquing, criticizing, condemning, being mean-spirited, he speaks about this on the Sermon on the Mount. Now he is speaking to his would-be followers. This is not a mass now of pagans gathered around. These are the people who are religious and checking him out on one side, but a lot of people who are interested in what he has to say. So they are the would-be followers of Jesus. And to them, he addresses this. And it's very simple. Do not judge. Three words. Can't get any clearer, can't get any simpler than that. The message puts it this way. Do not pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. The Amplified says in verse 1, do not judge, criticize, condemn others, so that you may not be judged and criticized and condemned yourself. There's almost an unspoken rule, which is about as unbiblical as you can get, which is, I can criticize you, but dare you not criticize me. I'm only pointing out your faults for your own good. That's no exception in there. Jesus does not allow the thing that we allow is, I can be critical of you, but I'm sensitive, so you need to be very careful of me. What he's saying here now, and if you have Bibles there, you can get them there, Matthew 7. And it's verses 1 to 5. Five verses is what he says. He says, do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it will be used against you. You know what he's saying? If you're mean-spirited and you're downright dislike the person and you're just taking the legs from under them, that's precisely the judgment that you will have to face, spiritually speaking. And sometimes even the person can react. Because this law of where I can say to you and you can say to me is about as unbiblical as you can get. Jesus is making the assumption, and rightly so too, is if you're judging others, they have the right to come back and judge you every bit as harsh. You've heard me saying before that I've seen down through the years that people have come and they want to play squash. Or you or me or somebody is the wall. And that means is they want to give everything, every bit of frustration and venom and everything that's in there, and they want to lash it out. They want you to take it and not react in any way other than receive it. All in the guise of, I want you to know how I feel. Now that happens in all kinds of relationships, doesn't it? I want you to know if someone is really mad. I want you to know how I feel. And we give them both bowels. With the underlying assumption is they'll just take it and think about it, process it, and come back and say sorry. That is not what he's saying here. What he's saying is, if you give it out, and to the measure you give it out, is the measure is going to come back to you. This wall of self-protection is an assumption that is not really there. I used to use the illustration. When I'm working as a pastor, it's very different. The illustration is, there's a difference between playing squash of where you're just hitting the ball, it's just coming back and you can keep hitting it. If you're playing tennis and you're serving to the next fella, he can take that ball and bounce it back every bit as tough and even tougher than you served it. So I used to say to people, are we playing squash or tennis? Because there's a world of difference. So if you take the Sermon on the Mount and verses 1 and 2, Jesus is ruling out squash. He said, that doesn't exist, lads. You want to bounce that ball into somebody and you want to give them for what you think of them and you want to point out their flaws and how it annoys the heck out of you and how they need to do something about it and fairly quickly, and expect that will be taken and appreciated and nothing is going to come back. No, I ask the question, is that almost an unspoken rule in Christian circles? The question I have is, why haven't we ever stood up and say, Matthew 7, 1 and 2, lads, as would-be followers of Jesus? Why hasn't anyone said, this is out of line, the Lord is listening, and to the very same thing we're going to get, give out, we're going to get it back? One of the reasons is we don't want to upset certain people. Well, I say, tough. If they give it, they have to be able to take it. If I give it, and I give it out, I have to give it out knowing that the same or even worse will come back to me. That's what he's saying. There's no other way of interpreting that, is there? Do not judge, because the measure that you do will come against you. Do not pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. I say that because it is at times an acceptable practice in circles, in Christian circles even, and is extremely damaging to relationships. Very bad. It does a heap of damage. And some things in life happens and we can avoid them, but this kind of thing we can. Anyway, move on. Not alone does he say it will boomerang on us, and not alone does he say it'll come back every bit as hard as we give it. He's now going to remove any pretense or any grounds we have to think we're right in critiquing and finding fault. Now, we're talking here now about nitpicking, mean-spirited type stuff, right? That's what he's talking about. So the question, he asks the question that he doesn't want the answer for. So verse 3 says this, he asks this question, he says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? No, he's talking here about the smallest little speck of dust that can get into your eye, but it's in your man's eyes and you can see that. That's the fault. But the problem is, the faults that your man have are minor in comparison to what you have yourself. So his asking is, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eyes and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Very simply, all he's saying is, why don't you look at your own flaws and your own faults and look at those rather than looking at the speck at the other person? So why don't we do that? Well, we'll come back to it in a minute. We'll leave that there. We'll get to the how in a minute. So why don't we do that? You know, the one reason why is we don't see him. Completely blind. I won't ask you, but could you name, don't name them out loud, my five faults? Maybe you said five is too short. Now, can you name your own top five faults? What faults and flaws are within you or within me that I need to be addressing inwardly, that they're in there, that I need to be addressing rather than putting my gaze out there and straightening out the rest? Which is all what his fault finding is about. So why is it that there's so much in me that needs to be sorted out and I need to focus on that? That's the question he's asking. Why? When you have so much to deal with yourself, are you looking at the next fellow's faults and flaws? He's not waiting for an answer, because what he's really saying is, you don't have and I don't have a leg to stand on. I think one of the problems is we are oblivious to our own stuff. And then we feel, because we're oblivious and the other person is oblivious to their stuff, we feel we're doing them a favor in pointing it out. What Jesus is saying is, you're not really in a position to do that. Now we're at a social gathering, and the first rule has been broken, right? The fault finding and the flaw thing has kicked in. It doesn't matter how it is. and the person who's been picked on stands up and says, wait a minute, you're pointing out this flaw in me. What about the flaws in you? And that just means, just so that I'd be charitable, I'll only name three. How would you feel if that happened? Well, of course, first of all, God forbid it would happen in a social circle. But this is precisely what he's saying. Because this kind of stuff damages relationships and does serious damage. So what he's saying is, you don't have a right to go and fix somebody else when there's an awful lot wrong with yourself. No, you either take that on board or you dismiss it. The problem is, we don't see what's wrong. And do you know why I know that is? Long ago, when we went to confession, we had to make up sins. Do you notice that? And kind of change the word to your own so it wouldn't always sound the same, you know? Because how often have you heard people say, I do no wrong? That's the kind of blindness he's talking about. When I do no wrong, it's very easy for me to go around and start pointing the finger at somebody else. The problem is, even me thinking that and going to do it is sinful. I'm already sinning. It could be argued I'm doing God's work for him, but he doesn't need it. He doesn't need me to be doing his work. So start with yourself. What do you need to be working on? There was a mentor of mine many years ago. We'd meet for coffee. The first question he'd ask after, second question after, how are you doing? What sin are you repenting of? That kind of gets you straight away from the eyes of looking at others. You're now looking at your own stuff. So what Jesus is saying is, look, your man has a speck, you have a telegraph pole. Remove that and then possibly you'll get it right. But guess what? It's ignored. We all knew that growing up, didn't we? About the speck of sawdust and the pole of the log. We've all known it. But it has been mostly ignored. Then he goes on, that's the why, and then he asks the how. Isn't it great? Just, of course, again, he doesn't give him time to answer because he doesn't want our answers. And then he says, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your own eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? There's a word for that, and it's called pride and arrogance. I feel justified in pointing out this fault and this flaw. Or I feel I'm in a better position to be judging because I am. Or it's because you're just awful and it needs to be pointed out. So why do we do it? Well, we do it because we feel that we have a right to do it, or we're helping the person, or we feel superior. And we might say humbly, well, I'm not perfect, but your man over there. Once we get to the but, we need to stop at that stage. Otherwise, we're crossing a line that we shouldn't cross. Now, Jesus is talking to would-be followers. Wouldn't you hate him to show up to a meeting of where we have just done that and asked the questions? What gives you the right to do that? You know, you can only do this if you're willing to be humble. I don't think there's any other way of doing it. Unless you're willing to be humble and acknowledge, and I mean a real humility, and being aware of your own stuff. It stops you then, or stops me, or anybody else, from looking outward. So how can we do it? Well, we can do it because we feel that we have a right, we're entitled to, and that's just a measure of pride. He doesn't give us that. But what is really killer is the next line. I cannot believe that Jesus would say something like this. No, this is not how to win friends and influence people. The next comment he makes doesn't do that. And indeed, if it was a social gathering and you said that to the host, by the way, there would be uproar. Verse 5. How would you respond to that? To the you in verse 5. Verse 5 begins, and this is Jesus' description of us when we do this. Verse 5 begins simply this. You hypocrite. One of the worst things you could hear Jesus saying to you, or to me, is to call you a hypocrite. Then he goes on to say, first take the plank out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. We're in it. We shouldn't have done it. The ball has been thrown. The person whose faults have been put out there is having none of it. And they hit the thing back as hard and even harder, and it's now at us. And before we say, no, you're, of course, the classic line is, you're being defensive. Being defensive, my foot. He opens the Bible and says, let me call you what Jesus will call you. Hypocrites. Every one of you. And I'm out of here. Would he be right to do that? Would he be right to do this? The answer, according to Jesus' teaching, is yes. Yes. No, it's very different if someone comes to you and asks the question, look, they're asking for advice. Look, I have this major flaw here. This thing is nearly killing me. And you know, that's very different. And we're talking here about nitpicking stuff that irritates people. Or people feel is, I'm ahead of you, therefore I need to bring you on board and kind of look after you. No, there's many things Jesus can call me. I wouldn't like him to be calling me a hypocrite. And that's precisely what he'll call me. If I go around with this fault-finding, critical, judgmental, mean-spirited attitude, straightening out everybody else, and he'll say, what gives you the right to do that? Look at the state of yourself. Sort yourself out. And maybe then you're in a position to actually help somebody. So we're back to our invitation. It's a fault-finding symposium. Question now is, how do you respond? Based on just those few verses. Would you go? Here's a reply that Jesus would like. Too busy dealing with my own flaws and faults. A very good biblical answer. It may even cause him to smile. Somebody is listening down there, and somebody is actually applying. Can't go because I'm too busy dealing with my own. We're in a setting where it happens. Would you have the courage to stand up and say, stop, and we'll stop it now? And I, for one, have so many things going on. I'm too busy with my own. And the last thing I want to happen is for Jesus to call me a hypocrite. Because if I keep going with this, that's precisely what he called me. So that's one way, too busy to deal with my own faults. Another way of saying it, sorry, I won't be attending as I neither want to be judged, which could happen very easily, or being accused, or be accused of being a hypocrite. For your homework, did Jesus follow through on this? Powerful illustration in the story of him being invited by religious people to lunch. And a woman comes in who had led a sinful life. And there's fault finding, there's criticism, there's judgmentalism, all of it has gone on. Unspoken. And Jesus points it out. Every fault and every attitude and action that didn't portray love. And those who were doomed to fault-finding and to judging ended up being judged themselves. The person coming in to show love, Jesus honored. He followed through on it. The reason why I say this and why he had me say this is very simple. I have seen situations of where tremendous work had gone on in building relationships, only to see it undone by loose mouths. I one time was at a meeting one time. It was a social gathering, not involved with us here now. It was bigger than this. And great work had been done. And then others were invited in, and I saw the thing just being sabotaged by critiquing, criticizing, and fault-finding. And nobody in there had the courage to stand up and say, you are doing something that is about as unbiblical and as wrong as you can get. And let me tell you what Jesus called people like that. And they can stop and we can move on and say, okay, we're out of line here. and we can stop it, and the Lord will honor that, and we can learn from it. What he doesn't want is for us to ignore it. Is this sermon going to make any difference? I don't actually know, because see, it only makes a difference if we see the outworking of Christianity in relationships as important as Jesus does. If we're just interested primarily in our own growth as a follower of Jesus and that kind of knowledge, and the other thing is secondary or is not really that important, then talks like this are going to have no effect. But the thing is, Jesus is looking at us primarily to see how we're relating with each other, because that's the measure of our growth, really. And so all he's saying here is, here's something that religious people are notorious for it. And he's saying, don't do it because you're not in the position to do it. And if you're doing it, then you're a hypocrite because your situation is even worse than the fellow you're trying to correct. That's what he gave me. Lord, what can we say? It'd be hard to find an innocent person who hasn't done it. But Lord, again, help us to be patient and to be merciful and kind to others. Nobody is perfect. Lord, help us to see our own stuff. And Lord, and let us sort that out. Lord, rather than being mean-spirited and critical and judgmental and feeling fine about it, Lord. Lord, we know, Lord, that when that happens, damage is done. And so, Lord, I pray, as David prayed, that you put a guard over our mouths, so that what is said would be helpful, encouraging, and to build each other up. Lord, none of us are perfect. All of us have faults and flaws. But Lord, let you be the one to point it out. And let us not, Lord, do that with the pointing, mean, spirited finger. And all God's people said, Amen.